tomé por un época. Si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk, real people, real stories. The He's Jizz Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Jizz Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker Movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. You know, language preservation is the process of documenting, protecting, and revitalizing language at the risk of it becoming extinct. Meet Brian Highhorse Jr. He is the defender of the people, a Lakota veteran, educator, and cultural bearer for the Puté Oyoté, a relative of Crazy Horse. He champions American and Indian rights, emphasizing the power of cultural understanding with a master's degree and nearly 20 years in K-12 and higher education. He currently serves as an adjunct professor at Ogallala Lakota College, sharing his deep knowledge of Lakota culture. Meet George McCullough, a writer, director, and producer with 2 decades of experience in award-winning plays, films, and TV, including Sundance and other projects. He is a former teacher and the youngest director of the IO Improv Theater, where he launched its first diversity program. George now focuses on documentary filmmaking to amplify indigenous voices across the U.S. Today, on our show, both gentlemen come together, united on an important front to help us understand language preservation and the reasons to keep it alive. We will discuss their new film, Ayote Wayake, where they dedicated their lives to bridging gaps, whether through cultural education or storytelling. They are empowering others and preserving the voices that might otherwise go unheard. George, Brian, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Yes, excited to be here.
George, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about your journey and your walk and how you got involved into this work.
Yeah, so the it was around early COVID was when this project began. My Uncle Bryant, who's joining us, has been in my life, since the beginning. And I always had a deep respect for him and his culture and his perspective. And we had a phone conversation where he was talking about the state of the language and that they're losing speakers and a lot of the young people aren't picking up the language. And he really had this, idea come to him through his prayer and through his spirituality that he wanted to have a documentary film made. And so that's where we began this journey of creating a documentary film that includes all the people you'll see if you watch it. And so it's really just been 4 years of a very, it's a lot of work, but it's a really beautiful journey we went on and a lot of learning and connection and watching these brilliant people who are in the film have their voice amplified. It's been a really rewarding experience.
Mm. Brian, we have the same question for you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved into this work.
Well, thanks for having us. My whole life, I've been an advocate for language. I grew up, almost lost it through boarding school, but it stayed inside of me. And I had to go back through ceremonies, ask others, and my language came back. And I knew what it felt like of being a Native man that didn't have a language one time. It felt lonely. And the minute I picked my language back up, it just like all this knowledge came. And I had to sort it out, and then I had to share it. And I said, Language is one powerful thing that we have as Native Americans. It heals the earth. It heals each other. There's a lot of humor, and there's a lot of cultural deep knowledge in it. And that's what we're trying to preserve. So it will help all cultures throughout this nation to start their own healing watching this documentary. You know, we went through so many hard times, and this is where the word resiliency comes in. Never gave up, you know, many, many hardships, but we came through strong winds, and here we are still standing, speaking the language. And our language is connected to the earth, the four winds, and the heavens. And when we echo our prayers, it's heard throughout this world, and it feels so good. We have to preserve that in order to heal this earth together. I want all cultures to learn their language and a prayer so we can all come together praying to unite each other through this whole country. Imagine what that would be like. I went back to say to my class at the college, the students, you're not the only one that don't have a language. Throughout America, people don't have a language, but they have a culture. They know where they come from. They know who the great-great-parents are. But when they came to Ellis Island, they had to leave all that there and become America. And since then, they have a journey of unknowing and a lonely journey for themselves. And if they go back and find that, how powerful that would be. I thought about that. I said, maybe we can start something where we take the messages across this country and meet different cultures. And the question always is, if you have a culture and if you don't have a language, how does that really feel?
Beautifully said, Brian. And again, I had the honor of watching this film. And for my listeners and platform, you guys have provided us a link, and thank you. We will share that on our website. What I learned from this is that the foundation of language is sacred. And like you mentioned, one thing goes, but it can't go without the other. They go hand in hand. George, tell us a little bit the people story, and how did you reflect the core message of this in this film?
Yeah, so it was that was what we really wanted to focus on, was the positivity and what the language holds. Because so many times, if you watch Native films, and it's nothing against them because there's a place for this, but it often shows the symptoms of the disease, as we say. So it's what happened to them and the symptoms of this, you know, history of traumatic experiences. So whether that's homelessness, addiction, high suicide rates, unemployment, all these different things that are often pointed to on reservations and a lot of communities in poverty. We wanted to show that this is not who Lakota people are, and it's not what their language represents. They are, it's a people of deep philosophy, a tradition of philosophy and spirituality and positivity and humor. So we really wanted to put that as the forefront of the film to show the beauty of this language and this culture. And that's from the elders who...
George, what were some of the challenges for you to put this piece together?
There was a lot of challenges. You know, from the early stages, it was during COVID when that was really at its peak, before there was any kind of, you know, vaccinations and a lot more worry about the health of the elders. So there was those concerns. A lot of it was financial, because these films, they're so time consuming. And the way we wanted to make it was, you know, the cinema verite kind of fly on the wall. So you tell the story by watching the experiences being lived. So it's just, it's a lot of time for editing. And in between each shoot, we had to find money to keep it going. Because, you know, now people can see what we were doing, but in the early stages, it was just our visions and dreams of what we wanted to do. So a lot of those challenges. And then the challenges of people who are in the film, like they're relied on for a lot of things in their community. They're the very strong people, but they carry their language and spirituality, so they're always in need and in high demand. So it was kind of getting schedules together and showing them why this was a valuable project to be a part of. But all worthwhile challenges to overcome.
Yeah, on the side of challenges, Brian, what challenges did you face to ensure that the film, you know, authentically represented the voice of the indigenous and that these experiences would not be overlooked?
Generosity, fortitude, bravery, respect came in. When we started this, we had no money. Me and George never received a penny doing this, and we still don't. You know, we paid the expenses, we paid the people, we paid the filmmaker, the filmers, all these people. Me and George, I'll say that when we started making films, we lived on peanut butter sandwiches, you know. And I said, man, this is tough work, but you know, it's beautiful. We're doing it, you know. So, you know, sleepless nights, you know, hunger, you know, all that. But you know what? We said, we're going to do this. And it's paying off. And I said, you know, it's worthwhile. So, you know, it was tiring, but good experience learning how to do something where the nation is now accepting it. And we have a lot of great compliments. It's been showing in elementary and middle schools and where I used to work. And people enjoyed it. People just seen it. And they said, it's such impressive and such informative that we never seen a documentary such as this. And that, to me, is really encouraging. And I said, you know, it's something that, like as George said, we have a hard time with finances because people didn't know what we were doing or you know, what we were saying. But now they're seeing it. But the next chapter will be even more powerful because they're going to hear the words, and words have a meaning. You're going to hear stories. Those stories go back to, you know, way back when Native American lived in teepees, mm-hmm. where all this knowledge comes from. We still use the buffalo and to survive on. The buffalo is a powerful being who keeps us alive. And we didn't have the buffalo, we probably would have starved to death. But, you know, when we were making this film and we thought about hunger, I thought about the buffalo. You know, we are that buffalo. You know, we're going to make it through the storm, all these things that we're going through, we're going to do this. And that was so encouraging to me, you know, but we used a lot of humor between me and George. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, everything was okay.
You know, it's the film translates to the people speak. So that was the most important part. And to have it kind of walk with their oral tradition and also inherently is preserving language because it's, you know, on film. But we would do screenings and make sure it was a collaborative process. So the people who are in the film were part of the editing process and the translation process, early screenings from when it was, you know, 2 hours long to whittling it down to the 60 minute version. So it was very much a collaborative, like community experience.
I don't want to give too much of the film, but at the beginning, they start out at a meeting. And at this meeting, you know, you have community members stepping up just saying the reasons why we need to preserve language. And that fight, you heard different situations come up. But there was one speaker who kind of stood out for me just early on and said, why are we even speaking English here? What's the use of this? If we're trying to fight for Lakota, just listen to the language that we're speaking now. So right there, I was already hooked in understanding that there's so much about the culture that gets lost, not only just in the words that are being spoken, but in our children. Because the people who were leading the front were saying, I'm even forgetting how to speak that. And I think that Brian said some of the words are coming back to me because a lot of it was really not being able to be retained. How difficult was that, Brian, to relive that? Even though you were filming this, to kind of be in that kind of moment where you said, I actually went through this. How difficult was that?
It wasn't difficult. It was beautiful because it brought back a lot of memories of the cultural past. And when they hear a word and somebody spoke, when the guy in the film spoke, more ideas, more thoughts, more words came from the past. And then when I mentioned it, it sparked in them that, you know, this language is still here. It's pretty powerful. So we have powerful words, just like the dictionary, very deep and very spiritual. And then when you bring those out, it touches everything. And to me, that was healing. I said, you know, this is really neat. And in the morning, after my prayers, I sat down and a word would come. I said, we do have a word for that. And it would come and I would write it down. And I said, I got to ask this next film. I got to ask this question. Some of the words people forgot. But then when we remember it, we bring it back and it sparks a new idea. One word in our language has so many meanings. And you have to be careful where you're going to use these words. That's how powerful it is.
Yeah. It was beautiful to see. We'd be driving like one morning. It was really early and there was fog. And it was on the Rosebud Reservation where Brian grew up. And then a word for that fog came back to him and he starts saying the words. And it's amazing to watch that happen in real time, like the land and the air giving him his language. It's really incredible.
Powerful. George, tell us a little bit how difficult it was, or maybe not, to balance the historical context now with this contemporary issue that we're facing for indigenous people and people who are oppressed for any communities, but talk about it through this film.
So as far as like just how much had to include or how to word it, or that was very challenging because we only had about, you know, 7 minutes to kind of catch people up on the history of how this happened from, you know, the beginning of boarding schools to modern day language loss. And we had a great, with a combination of Bryant and Stephen Newcomb, who's our scholar who's in the film. They did a really incredible job, and that's their life's work, is communicating that history through their perspective. So there were very specific words, and we took a lot of time to get that 7 minutes. And it was hard to let a lot of the history go because there was a lot that's not included. And we hope to expand on that next time. But even little things like people will say language was lost, and Steve making sure it's clear that it's not that it was lost, it was intentionally destroyed or attempted to be destroyed. So there's like little things in language like that that take a lot of drafting and rewriting to make sure we're honoring the truth of that history through the Lakota perspective.
You guys just brought up an amazing point. You're driving by in the fog. Now Brian is able to stay in tune with a word that he just remembered. How difficult must it be for these people of all lives who have to face such a challenge? But let's stick with the Lakota film. When we're thinking about the timeline, you guys did a beautiful job of wrapping up or taking us through that time warp, 1800s all the way to 2000s, talking about the struggle and what children had to face, because losing their language wasn't one thing, but there was some trauma. There were some mental health aspects to this. And Brian, can you walk us through some of that, if you can recall, pieces of what really stood out for you the most about that?
Well, we rented the reservation. The first thing I seen was the beauty. I told George, we're standing at the edge, looking at these trees, the valley. And I said, this is such a beautiful place. But when you grow up in poverty and poverty all around you, you don't see the beauty. But through the language, the beauty opens itself.
Mm.
And we were driving in the morning, the fog was in front of me. Through the windshield, I could smell that fog and I could hear it. I remember the word. He said that, George, his word is called P'o. Ampo P'o, early in the morning fog.
Mm.
And like it was speaking to me. I said, this is so beautiful. You know, when you remember things, the environment is speaking to you. And you could hear it through your spirit. And that's the most wonderful thing. So when we talk about language loss, poverty, we rise above that with the language. And everything's okay. We have a prayer. We have a song. We have a ceremony. We're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so through her whole life, when I teach history, it sparks something in me. A word would come when I get to the 1800. This is what happened to us.
Mm.
But the language and English, they couldn't communicate, like they were enemies. So this enemy tried to put their language on ours. And today, some of us be able to speak both languages fluently, and you understand both. And it's so beautiful. And when I seen and talked to the people about it, they too felt that. Mm-hmm. You know how it is to be who you are. It's okay. Speak in front of people. But what I seen was, we're still ashamed to speak in public our language. Instead, we're speaking English. That's what that gentleman said. We're speaking English here. That's what came to me right away. Because we have the boarding school shame and fear. We're going to be punished if we said something. So that fear is still here. We want to rise above that through this documentary. So it's okay. Free yourself to speak the language.
Hmm. Powerful. You being able to speak your native language would have gotten you in trouble. So when I saw that there was a situation that one of the characters in the movie said, I would look back to double check to see if it was okay and whispering at night because I was not free to speak. And I think that that's what you're, you know, leaning here towards. George, as you were compiling this together and you were thinking about where we live today and how things are, how difficult was that for you, you as an advocate for language preservation, but also the understanding that there is so much that has happened and some of us act like it never really even did. How challenging is that piece?
Yeah, it is. It is challenging. One thing that gave us a lot of hope, though, was when we were showing the film, a lot of it is that it's information that the education systems are often designed to skip over. So when people see it, their hearts are open to it. And that was really encouraging all different kinds of people when we're doing these screenings. So it's really hard to kind of have this story and know it's so disconnected from kind of the dominant culture in America. But there was a lot of hope in how people are connecting to it from all different backgrounds. So I think that's what we were really like starting to see, that this is about the Lakota community first and foremost, but then it's about all indigenous communities and also every culture that has come here. It's just a matter of when was your original culture taken from you? When was it asked to be dropped? When was that choice made? What did we gain by giving it up? What's that trade? Is it worth it? These are all, you know, without answers, these are questions that it's bringing up that I think are essential for our country as America to be asking with so many different people here together.
Powerful. Sometimes for me, the word democracy is just lost in the sauce, if you will, because every people, I can talk to you about the Latino communities and how we feel about being oppressed in different kind of ways. But just looking at how the indigenous people have had to overcome and still fight and still hunt for success. And yet the small victory seems so large for them. And this is what humbles me the most, is that the peace, even though that they were mistreated in many ways, there were parts, Brian, where children had to cut their hair because yes. Not only was the language being removed, but the cutting of the hair was something else. Speak to us about that.
It's taking part of your spirit first and foremost. And that's part of our identity, is our hair. And it's very sacred. It's so sacred that you, your mother, grandmothers in your family could touch your hair. Nobody else can touch it. And you have to respect it and keep it respectfully. You know, and I remember when I had long hair when I was young, I got so much name calling because I had braids on. And today, I still wear braids. I said, I'm not going to be afraid, ashamed of anything. I'm free, so I'm going to express myself through my hair. And wherever I go, I freely wear my braids, and I'm so happy and proud of it.
Mm.
And I want the kids to feel the same way. You don't have to get a haircut. Nobody's watching, and nobody's going to punish you for having long hair. You have the freedom to let your spirit be your spirit. When we do that, we're altering part of our spirit, our identity. We have to accept our native identity and be so proud of it. And this is what this film is going, and the students are really looking at it. All the young people in grade school are now looking at it. And it feels so good that all they see was Native people talking the language, and it makes them feel good. Regardless of all the pains that our children are going through, there is hope through this language and our prayers for the children, all educators are worth preserving language, history, and culture. And that's my hope for this documentary.
You know, George, Brian talked about you guys having a ball laughing whenever you had an opportunity in making this film. I'll bet you weren't making any money. You still were finding ways to be, you know, funny or having humor to take part of it. What were some of the most memorable parts for you in making this film, if you could recall any?
Oh, yeah, there's so many. But I always come back to just when we were our conversations, like when I go to Rapid City and Lexi and me will go out to lunch, and just those moments stick out to me as just some of my fondest memories, because I felt so lucky to spend that much time with him and continue to spend this much time with him, because he's hilarious. And and I told him he goes to McDonald's so much that they're going to be speaking the language there. And I go in and they're like, "Hey, honey, watch Dave, Bryant." Like, oh man, this is the way forward here. But just
wasn't
that kind of stuff, you know. Just
we're gonna have a French fry named after me, you know.
I don't know if that's a good thing, but you know that's what? Right. The word, yeah, it makes sense. Bryant, same thing for you. What was some of the most memorable times that you spend in making this film?
Well, I think my nephew George. He's a comedian. He's a writer for comedians. So I said, you know, in our language, it's called Heoka. Heoka's a clown, you know. It's just like when we get together, all these humor come to me, and I would talk to him about it. We just sit there and laugh, you know. And I said, it's good to get together when somebody understands your humor, whether they understand the language. And then when I tell them in English what that means, I mean, we just start laughing. Everywhere we go, there's something humorous to talk about. And that's what it is when we get together. It is a beautiful time to just laugh. And when you laugh like that, it's healing to us. So I remember grandparents coming together in a log house early in the morning, three grandfathers drinking hot coffee. They'll talk seriously with their language. They'll stop a few seconds, they'll drink coffee, and somebody say something, they're all laughing. And the laughing will continue. More people will come in and join in this laughing, and it just goes on. And that is the therapy and the healing that part of our culture. So no matter what it is, you have that, we're okay. You have to have that humor in your life.
That's so true. That's like I think it gets left out. And I always like when there's like stoicism stereotypes with Native people. And there is so much wisdom in the culture, but there is that humor that gets left out, and we try to put it in. We have more of it that we want to do next time, but we have moments in it where there's laughter and that joy, despite some of the, the tragic parts of the film. And I think when we were, when I reflect on my time as a high school teacher and just in the education field, that was always the people who could make it work, no matter what the challenge was they had humor and some spiritual, aspect to them and practice. However that was for them personally. So those are two super important things.
Yeah, there is some healing and laughter for sure. And it's great to see when family members can come together. Let's talk about that collaborative process. What was it like, working with a family member as co-directors, and who was in charge, if anything? George, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I felt like I was just humbly getting the cameras and the audio right to point at the elders, and they're in charge of the film. It's their show. So I think that is. What was the first part of the question? Sorry, before that.
Well, just working in collaboration with Brian as a family member.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we're family, you're like, okay, am I going to just give in to what my uncle wants? Am I going to work against them? Like, what is it?
Yeah, well, I think there was, you know, different compromises and conversations that were had, but we all, I think we were always working towards the same goal of wanting it to be the best, you know, film it could be. So I think that was kind of what always, you know, led the way was, you know, we were connected so deeply on, you know, what that was going to be. But also for me, it brings a lot of emotion because it's, you know, my uncle who I love, and you get to learn more about him and his story. And then I learn more about my cousins that way. I learn more about my family. You learn more about how people in other parts of your family respond to it. So there's a, you know, there's a lot of emotion, positive and like some of it negative that, you know, I experience. And when I show the film, I feel lucky if they're not there, I get to be with them again. And I always feel a wave of emotion come over me because it's, you know, this is like our heart, and it's not a career endeavor. It's just straight from the heart and through our family. So, yeah.
Well, no one can take this away from you two guys now. Families created this. Brian, tell us a little bit about that collaborative process. Being a teacher most of your life, an educator, an advocate, if you will, and now having to be a co-director, how was that different for you, if any, in any way?
Well, I was giving George all the credit, because in our culture, we don't brag and say, I'm in charge. We're not. It is our spirit, the spirituality, and George guiding. And I said, George, you're doing a great job. Keep doing. I'm right behind you, you know. Just look back and don't forget me, you know. And, you know. And so I never looked at myself as a man in charge. Or when George asked me, I said, I have to think about it. And then he comes back, this one needs to be changed. So then we'll sit down. There's no disagreement. There's no anger. And I said, yeah, because we're thinking about, you know, we have to do some great things for this film because we have real actors who are depending on us to become, you know, bring a documentary out. And when George was going to the film festival in LA to receive our award, I thought about a paper, a certificate that, you know, I have collected many of those. I might have a file full. So I thought about that. Then I was praying, and then I said, you know what? It's going to be the Native style Emmys that we're going to get, the statue. And here, when he showed me, I almost cried. I said, George, I thought about this in my prayer, this statue that you're holding. It's a female that he was holding. And I said, it's so powerful. And it just came to, and I said, you know what, George? You did a good job, you know? I'm glad you received it. You're looking good, you know?
Yeah, it was. I had to go up there and say, I'm the Washishu nephew of Brian Highhorse. we won most impactful film at the Red Nation Film Festival. So it was really a great honor. We were
Wow. Talk to us, George, a little bit about what inspired you to kind of shift your focus towards amplifying the indigenous voice. I know you've done a ton of things in the past, and you work on different areas, including comedy. How was this shift towards amplifying this voice, and how did you think this was reflected in the mission of the Lakota people?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there was a lot. I think I've always, you know, through my experience teaching in Chicago and just different experiences that I had in life, been very like empathetic and aware of different issues going on in the country and trying to make sense of it and kind of wrestling with it. And I think during early COVID, there was a lot of time to do that. And there was, of course, George Floyd and different protests going on. And they had an indigenous speaker at one of them in Los Angeles who spoke with them. And I saw that unity. And then I was reading another book about how, you know, we don't like grieve well as a culture in America. And then those two experiences, you know, I got to ask Lek Shi about this and try to get his perspective. And then he started going into, you know, like just how the language is kind of this antidote to the way people speak to each other. And it's just out of the national conversation, and we should do a documentary about it. So I had never worked in documentary film. I'm a comedy writer. And I was like, we should, but I don't know how. And I did, like, it was hard to like say like yes in the moment, because I was like, I don't know how to do it. And the next morning, it was just very clear. It was just like, this is what's going to be, we're going to be doing. and we'll figure out how to do this. And then it just started from there, but it was just a feeling I had. I don't know what it was, called spiritual, but it was some, you know, it was just very clear that this was the project to do and everything else can wait.
Mm. And back to that, because language acquisition was dormant, obviously. Another piece for me that stood out, and Brian, tell us a little bit about this. Not only were there silence where you couldn't really speak in public and be proud of who you were, but also there was the restriction. You only got to speak in a boarding school 1 hour a day. And we're calling this an hour, but think about it. Maybe they were not timed and specifically for an hour. Having to speak your language, speak to your culture for an hour a day, how difficult was that piece in having to be restricted and saying, I can't be me for 23 hours. I can be me for 1 hour a day, if you will.
I go back to celebrating Native American Day. I was jokingly said, one day we get to be Native in this America. So one day we could speak. And I start laughing about it. And I said, you know what? You can speak 24 hours, 7 days a week now. It is okay. You don't have to be restricted. We don't have to restrict ourselves. So when I start my classes, I will start speaking Lakota. When I lecture, I use two languages, Lakota, English, back to back, simultaneously explaining what I'm saying. When I say it in my language, it is, has a strong impact on those students. It's more meaningful in our language than it is in English. But when I get to the history, I get pretty radical in class, and the students knows I'm getting radical about this past, you know, what happened to us. And we're not going to stand for this, and I'm going further. And they started to get motivated. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be like you. I said, you're going to be like me. You're going to be an advocate, you know, and we can speak freely. And I would just speak my native, you know, language. I don't understand. I said, I really am trying to tell you, keep listening. You will get it.
Mm.
You know, and they could feel how I felt, and I teach history. So sometimes I get to a point, I'm really lecturing, I'm getting radical, and mm-hmm. I catch myself, you know, and like I'm in a protest, and I said, I got to slow down, and those students really like it. I said, I like it when you get to that point, you know, it really touches.
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm supposed to be doing a lecture.
mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's coming from the soul. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, I saw in the film, at least at the very beginning, you were trying to bring back Lakota to elementary students. So they, now this is coming back, and you're starting to break that. Tell us a bit about that plan. Was it a community-driven initiative? I know there was a teacher in the film trying to support and get that ball rolling. But how was that initiative created to say, look, we're going to begin bringing back our language or keeping it strong, and this is the way. Tell us about that process, Brian. How was that?
Well, personally, I started my career in a public school, and they had social studies, only had a few minutes of Native history that they could teach. And I just said, what can I do? And because I was working with high-risk youth. And then I went to the principal that I need to visit with you. I asked him, I would like a classroom. I like to teach my language, my culture, my history to sixth, seventh, eighth graders. And I think it'll be an impact if we bring my language back. And, you know, we had a lot of attendance issue. Our grades wasn't great and the student wouldn't study. And I said, you know, if you give me 6 months, I could bring those grades up. And that was a challenge to myself. And I said, we're going to do this. And when mm-hmm. I start to speak, those kids paid attention and they wanted it so bad that they hung in there. The grades went up, attendance went up, the behavior decreased. And that principal was so amazed. He said, keep going. We got a support from a governor and a state senator in what I started. And to me, it was like, wow, this is great. And from there it started. So I went to Rosebud Reservation and asked them, let's have a meeting so we can spread this preservation throughout schools. History and culture should be in schools. And it started that way. So many people that I worked with have passed on and some that is in the film, I'm still working with them, and they're helping us preserve the language. And they're so spiritually healthy that I said, do you know what? We can go a long ways, you know, educating this nation about native issues, native problems, language. We can talk to this nation through a documentary. And I'm really glad and thankful that you have us on to discuss some of these problems that we face. A lot of injustices that we face, a lot of social injustices. So, you know, we're still standing strong, you know, against everything. Like I would say, against the wind, but we'll go through it. We're going to get on your side together. It's not only us that experiences injustice. Throughout this country, many people are experiencing the same thing. So, you know, we know how they feel. They know how we feel. You know, they're in urban areas. We are on reservation. We are in smaller places. Yet we have large voices. And I told the people, we have a small voice, but through this documentary, the universe will hear us.
And big hearts to boot. You know, one of the things I also saw was that the language piece was one, and we haven't touched base on this, but some of the cultural background, the music, the songs, how was that impacted? Spirituality, how was that impacted? And George, can you speak to that a bit about when you lose your language, it's not just being able to stay committed to the culture from the vocal. There are other pieces to this that really go down fast.
Yeah. You know, the music in the film, we were, you know, very lucky to have, because a lot of people, I think, reconnect beginning with music and the beat of the drum and that heartbeat and that the spirit of the language. And seeing that there were different drum groups when we would go to these different locations or we were recording them live and using that in the film. And then having some people actually just write songs specifically for the language, that's how the film ends. And we kind of use contemporary technology to mix traditional music throughout the film. So yeah, it was a very important piece, and a piece that came later that we just kind of felt we needed to have that be part of the score to really bring this film home, and connect it on that deeper level and that beat level.
Most of us that really connect with music, whether it is in church, whether we do it for our self-advocacy and in our own moments of prayer, this really, that part to me, when I hear music that really touches, I'm respectful of all musics of all lives, but that ending was amazing. And just hearing the beat of the drums, you can feel the struggle. It took you there, even though you were not part of it. And I think you guys did a great job in doing that. Brian, for you, what are you trying to do next now? Now that this film happens, what's your next move?
Our next move is to talk strongly about the culture, how culture connects to music, how culture connects to the language. And throughout this whole process, language and culture is history, how things have happened, how things have changed. I've seen so many changes with so many different cultures, so many different places that I've been. But I always go back to the drum beat. When I hear the drum beat, it is very empowering to me. You know, when you hear that, it makes you want to get up, and because I do dance at the powwows, and I can't wait to get there. That's healing. And I can experience the first time I went out. It was an honor for veterans, and they had us coming out. I was dancing, and I was like in a bubble, and I was like a butterfly. Every time the drum beat hit, I would be flying up in the air. And when it goes down, I'm going down with a rhythm. It felt so good. All I seen was a fog and all these cameras going off. And I'm coming out feeling great, you know? And I said, that's the best healing that anybody can experience. So a drum beat is the beat of the heartbeat of our nation. That's the way I always look at it. So sometimes I put one on and it feels so good. I said, wow, I would get up from my desk and dance, you know?
And for me, one of the things that I saw, Brian, was that you have taken, even in our conversation today, your humble approach to a struggle. It was a genocide. It was how your people were impacted. And you take this gracefully. This just shows the kind of man and honor that you are. But for me, it really was hurtful to see. This is, again, some of what I get upset with, that many times we have to see this and live through it, probably not understand the ins and outs because we are not part. But those of us who have been oppressed in any certain way can make a connection to it. And that is what hits home for us when we see that the bigger person is taken over, not because we can't fight back, not because we can't give them like a dose of their own medicine, but it's just really because we have to take our own self and our sense of belonging and just put it in our pockets. You know, many a times when I'm handling conflicts at school, and you hear parents tell the son or daughter, if someone hits you, you better hit back. I don't send you to school to fight, but if someone hits you, you better hit back. And in this case, to see the years and years of you getting hit and not hitting back, but in a way, you kind of did it gracefully to teach them, showing them. So now I show you, this is what pain looks like. How does that feel? How does it feel to do that? How does it feel to get struck 50 times for half an apple? How does that feel?
Mm.
So for me, that was the movement that carried on throughout this film. And I'm encouraging everyone who's listening to please take advantage and watch this beautiful film. George, as you're thinking about it, what's next for you, friend? And what's your plan now that this was a big success?
Well, we're trying to work on a multi-part series where we can really go into the depth of the history and the language and continue the work. We're already starting. We're looking to raise money for that next piece, applying for grants, looking for support. So we're trying to get it started because this is the month or this is the decade of Indigenous language preservation, because there's so many languages that are on the brink of losing elders. So we want to make sure we're putting this work in over in that time to make sure that that doesn't happen and doesn't go with them. There's also, you know, a lot of, like, because you deal in wellness, and we want to show like that language is essential to wellness. And there's people in the film who work in prison systems, substance abuse, education, and through the language, they're meeting with Indigenous people who are in there because of that disconnect and the behaviors that came from it, and showing just that power. If we can really show that, which we know we can, I think it'll be something that will connect to people deeply and show us a path forward as a country for, you know, healing a lot of these issues that we're only dealing with through locking people away.
Brian, can you speak to that a little bit, that trust factor in understanding that there were kids here, family members and adults traumatized behind the trust factor? How difficult was that? And I know George just touched on that, to open up and still be, you know, shame on me, I got tricked again, or shame on me again. How difficult was that side of it, if any, for you and for your people?
Well, first of all, I have to use the language to talk to the people that your voice will be heard. Your voice is beautiful. And the more we talk, we come out that trauma and our first steps to healing. That's for all cultures. You know, admit it, let it go. It's just like going to AA meeting. The more you talk, you let the spirit of alcohol go, because you know what it does to you. The culture and the trauma is the same way. We talk to it. It's like a living being. You know what? I'm not going to have you in my life anymore because I'm me now. So you can go away and please don't bother anybody else. And I'm going to get up and say, you know what? I'm okay. Look at me. I've been beaten. They took it, but now I got it back. I'm standing strong. And nobody will ever take it again. That's how we have to tell ourselves. And now we're empowering others to do the same thing. And our language is used in the recovery process. The songs, the ceremonies are used in the recovery process, which is so beautiful. The spirit understands that addiction, and they wanted to let it go because it was never part of our culture, you know. And I know that trauma is still there for some people that totally lost their language. And we want to, you know, send our healings to them, you know, and work with them. And, you know, we always offer prayers for everybody when we did this film, all included. We have to heal together. We want to listen to your story. If you let it go, you're not hanging on to it. See, the more you're hanging on to it, it stresses you and makes you ill. So you have to get that sickness out of you. Let it go. Breathe freely. That's what it's all about, this language.
Mm-hmm. That's what I, to add to that, you know, we're so lucky to have the elders who are in the film and what they were able to go through and overcome and the resilience they have to be here with their language. It's hard to even put that into words of what it took to do that. And I often think about the people who were lost along the way who never got to be here because they lost those battles, you know, and not to put that on them. I can feel that loss of so many more people. If we had more of those minds in the world, how great it would be. And we know there's young people who are kind of on that threshold of going one way or the other. And we hope more people can get to this other side with us.
I mean, I'll tell you what, you guys accomplished a whole lot. And I know that for me, there's a sense of forgiveness, you know, because to become better, you have to forgive. To Brian's point, there's so much that we can think about, but there are some times that you also get sad that these promises are continuously being made and that different people are being impacted. But I do believe that these battles were not totally lost. The ones that were lost in the battle, they were part of making this through. Yes. And for Brian and for you to see this film happen, I think that's part of that success. George, before we let you go, the floor is yours. Tell us about what you want us to remember about you, the film, and your next moves going forward.
Well, I would just like to say I'm, you know, excited for people to meet everybody in the film, spend more time with them and Bryant. And I just hope that you find the film and push play and watch it. And it's not a political film. It's a beautiful film and a very positive one to watch over, you know, the holidays. So we just want you to have that experience. And if people are in a position where they can support our future projects, you know, we have our website, oyatewoyaka.com, and we have a great 501c3 sponsored, the Bluebird Cultural Initiative. And this goes to great, this is in great hands, any donation. Like, this is going to traditional people. And I think after you watch the film, you'll know where our hearts are at, and that we have only good places we're going to be going in the future with filmmaking.
Big up. Brian, the floor is yours, friend. Before we let you go, such a pleasure meeting you. Tell us something about you, the next steps in this movement.
Well, I tell you, firstly, that the emotions were very high making this video. Very, very high. You thought you were healed. You thought you were okay. When you start to critique what George has done, to say, critique this lecture, we're going to do it. So I was watching it. I told George, I was watching it, and all of a sudden the tears just came. And I wanted to wipe it. I'm strong. But I said, no, I'm going to finish it because I have to critique it. It was running, the tears. And then when it finished, I said a prayer, and I said, I forgive for what has happened. And I prayed for those kids that were brought home. And after that, it made me so strong. I feel good after I let that go. This is what I want for people who have experienced boarding schools or any trauma. You know, if the tears come, let it go. Wash your spirit with the tears and free yourself. And after that, you will stand strong. And it feels so good. And I'm really glad we did this documentary because, you know, it gave me so much insights, so much power that, you know, we can do it better. And I feel that. We're going to, the next one's going to be even better. There's going to be a lot of emotions, you know, a lot of strength. And like, it's going to open the minds of people who have been oppressed for a long time to free themselves spiritually.
Hmm. Wash your spirits with your tears. Yes. You know, in the pursuit of success, the greatest challenges do not come from external setbacks or personal failures, but from the trickery of societal standards, which sometimes blur the lines between reality and illusion. And that, my friend, is called a dream catcher. Because on this platform it was built, because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. but this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you real soon. We're out. Gentlemen, blessings. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde de la Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.